So we move now into the fourth chapter of the letter to the churches of Galatia, and we simply will hear what the Spirit says to the church. When the fullness of time had come, God sent his Son, born of a woman, born under law, in order to redeem those who were under the law, so that we might receive adoption as children. And because you are children, God has sent the Spirit of His Son into our hearts, who cries out, Abba, Father. So that you're no longer a slave, but you're a child. And if a child, then you're also an heir through God. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Seems as though the last couple of years, and this year in particular, that this, I was going to call it a money-making fad, but that sounds kind of like, you know, sarcastic, and I would never be sarcastic. But whatever this thing, Christmas in July, suddenly is all around us, whether it's TV or whether it's your newspaper or internet, there's Christmas cookie decorating parties and whatnot. There's a Christmas tree. A quilted Christmas ornament making. You could go to those particular activities. Some retail stores are playing Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and Jingle Bells. There's all sorts of different festivities going on here. You go to a Pirates game, you can get a Christmas in July Pirates shirt. Yeah, with all sorts of Christmas ornaments on here. You come to the game in August, it would be very exciting for multiple reasons. First of all, it's going to be a very different team than the one in July, because they're going to be moving a lot of people to other pastures in the next 9 or 10 days here. And there will be younger people up and whatnot, but it's also an opportunity for our family to regather. It's going to be a very different experience than in the past, so you really want to take advantage of this. Now, this Christmas in July, though, is a bit of a mystery, because for us, well, not just for us, really for all Christians, Christmas is every month. Christmas is every week. Christmas is every day. So it's kind of, why are we doing this all of a sudden here in the end of July? Money talks. Now, let's go backwards a little bit here. So whether we're here every week or whether we just need to refresh our memories, we have Paul, who has traveled throughout central Turkey in the Galatian area. He has established a bunch of churches. He has preached the gospel. The text says that the people in the Galatian churches heard him as if he was Christ himself. That's a major danger sign right there, because when church members start to in any way perceive that their preacher is Christ, that's a bad sign. Likewise, if the preacher perceives him or herself as Christ, that's a worse danger sign. So those of you who are elected to the PNCs, be wary of that. You don't want someone who thinks they're Christ. Now, the people accepted, they embraced, they formed the churches. He went over to the western coast on the Aegean Sea there. And then he gets word that there are, quote, false teachers who are telling the people in the churches of Galatia that faith alone, belief in grace, is insufficient. There is more. There are things you have to do. Namely, you've got to fulfill the 613 commandments in the Jewish law. So there is a doing aspect to this. Paul gets a little upset. Well, he's irritated. He's angry. He's outraged. And he writes a letter. That was the very common way by which people would communicate with each other. They would write letters to the churches. The churches would then read the letters in public, just as much as we have read bits and pieces of the letter here. Now, he is trying to, in effect, to reorient them. He's trying in some ways to say, you've got to get back on the narrow track. So a lot of the letter gets into some very abstract, what we'd call theological categories here. These are not all sorts of little parables and little stories about lambs and Jesus. They're stories about law and grace. We did that one week, but it repeats itself again and again and again. This particular text, oh, just four verses here. This is a text that's about sin. It's about incarnation. It's about redemption and adoption. Those are probably not four words that flow off our lips in everyday conversation. More abstractions. Now, we also skipped over some things here. So we've leapfrogged a little bit from near the end of 3 up into chapter 4, verse 4. What did we miss? We missed a lot of sin stuff is what we missed. So before faith, we were imprisoned. So the metaphors are going to be rather demonstrative here. We were guarded under the law. We were under the thumb of sin, okay? That was our disciplinarian. That's what was guiding our lives here. Sin, okay, so we just go for it's self-serving. It's me first. It's the way we're all hardwired, whether we accept that or not. That's just a fact of life. Any creature is hardwired to be me first. Survival comes more important than anything else. And that's what disciplines us. We are, in effect, then, the metaphor is that we're underage. We're not mature enough. We're not old enough yet to really accept responsibility for making decisions on our own. We are under the yoke of this sin and death thing. So we are slaves, and we are under the tutelage of this guardian of sin and death. Okay, so it goes on and on and on and on and on. So it's a rather negative to start with, but then again, I note that Calvin, who is in effect sort of like the founder of the Reformed tradition, chapter 1, page 1, in his Institutes, that is the primary tomes that lay out the kind of theological presuppositions of, well, what does it mean to be a Reformed Christian? Page 1, chapter 1 is human depravity, sin. So you have to kind of accept some things if you're going to embrace the Christian gospel. And the fact that we are under the yoke of sin, of me first, is a core belief of Christians. We are dominated by that. There's nothing that you or I could do to escape from it. Oh, maybe people want to feel they could pray, they could put their hand in the sand and feel Jesus or play with crystals or whatever people do. And we do astound ourselves sometimes when we get beyond ourselves to embrace others before ourselves, to look out for others. Maybe that's our family, maybe that's friends, maybe it's neighbors, maybe it's just giving a whole lot of time for the children of the community, for VBS. We do these things, but we do slide back because we are under the yoke of sin and death. You know, there's nothing you can do to escape that. So we are going to say that there are no words, no deeds you can ever do to totally liberate yourself, 100%. And then we get into issues of shame and guilt, and that's another issue there. Now we finally get to the text, at least the one that we read. I might note, this is kind of maybe serendipitous here, or maybe it's providential. These four verses are the identical texts, words that are read the first Sunday after Christmas every year. So in other words, this is an incarnational text about, well, we celebrated Christmas on the 24th, 25th, what does it mean? So that is kind of interesting that we didn't, Melissa and I didn't pick this because we thought it was Christmas in July. It just came out that this particular Sunday is the so-called Christmas in July weekend here. All right, now we're finally ready for this text. We got all this ominous stuff about sin. We got Paul trying to straighten out the Galatians. When the fullness of time had come, how do you know what time it is? You know what time it is because you observe what's going on around you. Oh, I see leaf buds on the branches of trees. It's springtime. So there is evidence, and then therefore there is an inference. Yes? Okay, we teach this to 10th grade kids in high school, right? You observe based on what your data is. You now have an inference, okay? Children are frolicking in the snow and throwing snowballs at each other. It is winter time. Stores are full of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and Jingle Bells and the airwaves on television and radio. It's Christmas time. That's how we know what time it is. There is evidence. Well, the Son, God has sent his Son to redeem the sin-struck world. That's the fullness of time. That is the turning of the ages. That is a monumental shift. The earth moves. The galaxies move. That's what time this is. This is the fullness of time. All will be different from henceforth because God sent his Son to redeem the sin-struck world that cannot save itself, cannot by any words or deeds free itself from sin and death. This Son was born of a woman. Ah, okay, yes, born where? In a stable, in a manger, raised in a backwater town in Galilee, Emmanuel trade as a carpenter. This is an ordinary, regular, full-blooded human being. It's very important that we understand that Christ is as human as you and I are. But he's also born under the law. He's born under the yoke of sin and death, just as you and I are. But there's a big difference. You and I succumb to the wages of sin. We succumb to myself first, but Christ does not, because he is empowered by the gift of the Spirit. Now, this gets a lot of, you know, cloud talk, abstraction, because it's not a nice little parable with a little story here, but you just sort of hang with this. So God has sent into the human world a fully human being who lives as you and I do. When he smacks his hand with a hammer in his daddy's carpenter shop, he cries out in pain and he bleeds just as you and I would. God sent to redeem. Well, okay, redemption. Wow. Some of you save up little coupons and you take them to the shop and save, right? And you trade them in. You get something for it, right? You take foreign currency and you redeem it for U.S. currency. Redemption. Christ is paying whatever the price is for sin. Now, this is really abstract and this is really off the map here. Yeah, he is going to pay the price to set us free, to liberate us from the yoke of sin. So we've got abstractions on top of abstractions. You and I cannot free ourselves from sin. Christ can and did. How? Well, because Christ took all our sin in his body on the cross and died that we might be liberated from sin, right? Now, this is where you get into belief, because this is not objective fact. There's no way to unearth this and nail it down. Some people believe, some people don't believe, but we need to understand what it is that we're saying we believe. So we are now freed from sin. Well, we still live in the old world and we're still yanked around by sin and death. Okay. God sent his Son, human, born under the wages of sin here, redeems all those who are also yoked under sin, so that we might be adopted, adopted as children. Yeah, so now we become the children of God. Yeah, we are now become a family. That's why we are brothers and sisters. That's why we don't have hierarchies. There's nobody on a pedestal. Okay, and there's nobody who's under the thumb. It's just one level. It's family. It's sisters and brothers. Okay, we are a plural. You know, athletic teams, for one, what do? They practice as groups. You can't practice as a team by yourself. You have to practice in groups. So whether you're lifting weights or whether you're running or you're running plays, you help each other, you support each other, you pick up each other. You try to go out and run 10 miles by yourself, you can go do that, but if you run with 3 or 4 people with you, you will run faster and stronger because people pick you up, they support you. When you don't realize at 3.5 miles, you lose 0.5 step. The other 3 or 4 people keep going and you go with them, and then they lose 0.5 step and they go with you. That's what it is. Church family, we gather together to worship, to study, to dine together, to go to a ball game together, to do VBS together. That's what a church family is. We are now adopted as liberated, freed children who need to help and support each other, because otherwise, individually, we're just going to slide back under the yoke of sin. But we support each other. We help each other. Don't people do? They kind of behave a little bit kinder, gentler, nicer, better around in the church. Yeah, not always. Sometimes there's ugly things that occur. But by and large, we kind of check each other. We don't stand up here and use all sorts of four-letter words and run down people, as you might see if you look at blogs and comments on newspaper articles and whatnot. We listen to each other. We are here to embrace each other, to support each other as adopted children of God who have been liberated by the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. That's why he was sent. That's why this text is read on Christmas Sunday, is that this is the sending fragment. This is a Christ has come. Why? He was sent to redeem, to pay the price, that you and I might be freed from sin. There is a sending and there is a purpose. That's called L-O-V. Wondrous love. Capital W, wondrous love in the name of Christ. Thank you.